There is only one thing that you can control in your life. That's your thoughts. You can choose to be happy or you can choose to be miserable. It's just that simple. Join me for the next hour on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, where I hope to inspire you to make the conscious decision to be happy. For that is the exact place where you need to be to create your own magnificent reality. Let us begin now. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I'm so glad you're here because we have a really informative show, and it's all about living life to the fullest and creating it. And I have discovered this really tremendous book, which I urge everyone to read because it has got so much wisdom and exactly what we need to awaken right now in this particular time in history. It is called Awakened Wisdom, A Guide to Reclaiming Your Brilliance, and it's by a previous Buddhist monk by the name of Patrick Ryan, and I am absolutely excited to talk to him tonight. I think you're going to find this show to be absolutely brilliant. So I want everybody to just sit back and relax, get comfortable, because this is going to be an eye-opener. And get ready to order one of the best books that I have read in years. We'll be right back after these words.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at LOARadionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, LOARadionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries. Is the radio station for your well-being.
Have you been receiving your free issue of Alms Times magazine in your email box? Every 2 weeks you'll receive this top quality magazine that has spiritual, metaphysical, and scientific information that will rock your world. Go to almstimes.com. OMTIMES.com to sign up for your free subscription today.
NLP tip number one, the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. So if I say something to you that's intended to help you and yet you're offended, then that's the meaning of my communication. I offended you. Why would I spend time defending my intention when I could just accept that I offended you and then spend time making or communicating in such a way that helps you respond in a way that's in accordance with my intention? So don't spend time defending your intentions when what you said didn't work. Accept that the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. If you'd like to learn more NLP tips and strategies, come to INLPcenter.com. We have a free mini course for you. It's INLPcenter.com. Hope to see you there.
Okay, we're back and getting ready to talk to Patrick Ryan. But first, I want to tell everybody that next week is our Law of Attraction Radio Network's Spiritual Singles Cruise. And I'm so excited because we're going down to Cozumel. And the most fantastic day of all, October 28th, we're going to be on the ocean sailing for Cozumel and then visiting the Mayan ruins. I am so excited, and I'm absolutely looking forward to meeting all these like-minded people. I'm just so excited. So I want to let everybody know that my next show will be a couple days late, but it will be coming up, and we are going to be talking to Elise Ballard about the book Epiphany. And it is really terrific, so I want you to stay tuned for that. I also want to announce that we have another cruise coming up. April 30th, 2012, it's going to go out of the port of Long Beach and go down to Catalina Island and then go down to Ensenada, Mexico, and then return. This is going to be an energy healing cruise, and we have Dr. Garland Landreth coming on and tapping with Ho'oponopono. I always say that wrong. And Quantum Touch. And then we have also our good friend Tom Lesher. He's coming on to talk about the astrology and the alignments of the planets in 2012. And then we also have Frank Butterfield, who is the channeler for the Communion of Light. And I'm really looking forward. You know, I think Frank does a fabulous job in communicating this expanded knowledge. Yeah, I of course love Abraham Hicks, but I think Frank is another step up that's more expanded with the knowledge, and he is fabulous. He is also going to be doing private readings on board, and as a matter of fact, you'll be able to get your astrology readings on board as well. And you can have the tapping, too. It's so much fun. We're going to have other energy healers. It's just going to be a fantastic cruise. And as always, will be a life-changing one. So you not only will you have a great time, but you are really going to be impacted so positively. And so I hope you can join us. Now, let's get on with this show tonight with Patrick Ryan. Again, it is a fantastic book. I want to show everybody Awaken Wisdom. This book should be in every house because it tells you how to become happy. You know, we're always saying here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio that the secret is to being happy to create the life that you want to. Well, he's actually telling you how to become happy, even in the midst of all of this. And it's great. So I urge everyone to go get the book. And I want to welcome Patrick Ryan to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you, Jules. I'm thrilled to be here. You've got a great show going.
Thank you. I do enjoy it. Let's start off from the beginning, because I've already told all these listeners, these fabulous listeners, that this is the book that they need to have, because I've read it, I've loved every single word of it, and on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, we always talk about getting into that happy place, but we often don't know how to get into it, and your book is a step-by-step instruction on how to get into that place of well-being. So I think it is incredibly valuable, and it's the reason why it is a best-selling book.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's one of my missions in life, I think, is to take what otherwise might be ethereal ideas and bring them right down to a very practical level. And I've heard from a lot of people that the book seems to accomplish that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You actually were a teenager and you died.
Correct. It was accidental, and it happened. And up until that moment, I would say that, you know, in a real thumbnail sketch kind of way, I had come from a very good middle class family. I wasn't lacking anything in my life. It was a good family environment. And somehow, as a teenager, I still found myself spiraling down this very dark side of life. And while that was happening, I was experimenting with drugs, as so many teenagers do, and living kind of a reckless life. And I knew all the time I was doing that it was my own choices taking me down that road. And at the same time, I just kept repeating those choices over and over until one day, by accident, not intentionally, I did overdose on drugs and found myself literally dead, lying on the floor. Somebody there, thankfully, was able to do CPR on my body to keep my systems going. And in that experience, I found myself having a direct encounter with the divine that to this very day has lit my path, so to speak.
Wow. And can you tell us what happened? What was that exchange like?
Yeah, well, when I experienced the actual dying, my body fell onto the floor, and I found myself lifting out of my body and being high above, looking down and observing the scene. And I have to say that this was a long time ago. It was 1972. And at that time, I had never heard of the idea of a near-death experience. I'd never heard of it. And so I had no context through which to understand what was going on. But there I am with the divine and in what I would call this profound field of love and joy. And in this, I'll call it a conversation, but I have to say that it was a conversation of a nature that is unlike you and I or others when we have a conversation, using our physical bodies. So this was more of an exchange of consciousness than more than anything, I would say. And one thing that was made really clear to me was that it was my choices that had brought me to that particular experience, and that I was kind of given the choice about whether or not I wanted to return. And the understanding I took away from that is that in this life, we're on a path of development at a soul level. We're on a path of development. And I was crossing over early. And thankfully, because my body was viable, I had the opportunity to choose one way or the other. And while all that conversation is going on, I'm also aware that all the times of the past and present and the possibilities of the future seem to converge in that moment into oneness. And everybody I had ever known in my life and many people I had no conscious memory of ever meeting were appearing before me, like a kaleidoscope of images. And in the course of all that, I just felt nothing but love and gratitude for all that I had experienced up until that point. And then I got to the point where it was time to choose. So as much as I felt compelled by that energy of love, it was really clear to me that coming back was the best choice. And so I made that choice. And in that second, I came back down and reintegrated with my body, much to the shock of everybody that was there.
Wow, that's amazing. And after that, you became very interested in Buddhism.
Yeah, that was kind of down the road. But what happened immediately after that was I made a commitment to the universe that I was going to follow a path of light. And I had no idea what that was going to look like. And at that time, I just knew that I had to make a radical shift in my life. So I moved out of the city where I was living. I moved into a forest area. I was up in Canada in the Rocky Mountains, and I moved into a small town. And I just restarted my life from scratch. Even my family, I temporarily had to tell them that, look, I just need some distance right now and I'll be back. But I have to go off and kind of come to terms with where I'm at in my life right now. So I spent the next, two and a half decades as an entrepreneur, creating small businesses, creating medium-sized businesses, learning about the spiritual side of life. And eventually that led me into a monastery in Burma where I did become a Buddhist monk.
Wow. How long did that take you to become a Buddhist monk?
Well, the path from the near-death experience, or I actually call it a death experience. I think once you've actually died, that's you get to have a death experience. So the path from there to being in the monastery was probably about 25 years of other spiritual experiences and learning and studying. When I actually became a monk, I lived in the monasteries for a while, and I was given tutors to kind of bring me up to speed, so to speak, in terms of what I needed to know to become a monk. And I spent a year in Burma, or what's also known as Myanmar, traveling from monastery to monastery there on the most amazing adventure.
Wow, it sounds so fascinating. You know, there are so many parts of this book that is just mind-blowing, and it's like hits me right between the eyes. But you have got 8 intentions or good states, actually, mm-hmm. in which you are helping people to understand. And each state brings us closer to awakening.
Exactly right. And what's been interesting about these eight states is they're inspired by many different traditions. When I've presented this work in Asia to Buddhist and in Japan to Shinto audiences, they come to me afterwards with a lot of appreciation and they go, well, clearly you've been influenced by our teachings. And I go, yes, I have. And we're all very happy about that. And when I present this work in Israel to Jewish audiences, they come to me and say, well, clearly you've been strongly influenced by our religion and our teachings. And I go, yes, I have, and thank you. And when I present this in North America and Europe to Christian crowds, I hear the same thing. And for the last couple of years, I've been going to Egypt and Islamic countries and presenting the work over there, and they come and tell me the same thing. So I love the fact that this work is really getting to the center of all of these amazing world traditions. And so the eight states are influenced by all of the above, and they're presented around a wheel because the idea is that they don't happen in order. We want all eight of these states to be bright and vibrant in our life all the time.
All of them. I love this thing about what you said about karma. Each word you speak has karmic influence. When you speak poorly of others, complain, or put yourself down with your words, you're adding weight to your karmic backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, wow, that is so good. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, you know, in a lot of the Eastern traditions, the word karma is used a lot. And, you know, here in the West, we talk about it. We just have expressions like what comes around goes around.
Right.
And that's karma. So this idea that there's a couple different aspects in my experience to this whole idea of karma. One is what we have created throughout the course of our life in terms of the results of our actions, our thoughts, and our words does add up. And the really good news is that the turnaround can be instantaneous. In other words, when we realize that we can choose to move forward from this moment on, just from a place of being of good thought, good words, and good actions, just by making that choice and then following through on it, we instantly change our karma. Now, it can take time to clear up a lot of stuff that's been happening, but the turning the corner can be instantaneous. And then the other thing is it might take time for the world around us to kind of get the memo that we're operating in this brighter way. But eventually the world around us will reshape itself. As you know and listeners know, the world we're living in is a mirror that we've created. And so it can take the mirror a bit of time to adjust. Some things you'll see happen very quickly when you make a fundamental shift like this, and other things will take more time. But the world will adjust. It will reflect back this new way of walking and being in the world.
So what you said is so important in that we have to really commit to monitoring our thoughts, our actions, our states in order to become awakened. It's like mindful thinking.
Absolutely. And one of the things when I was writing this book that I wanted to be very mindful of was not to try to put my value system on other people, because there's thousands of value recipes that are beautiful and good. And each of us has our own unique expression of a good walk in this world. But having said that, I wanted to come up with a couple of criteria that people could consider that I do think work right across the board. So a couple of the ideas that I present in the book is this thought, word, or action adding beauty to the world? And if it is, it's probably good. And the other one is this thought, word, or action putting life-giving energy out into the world? And if it is, it's probably good. And if you can't answer yes to both of those questions, then pause and just take a look for yourself and go, is this the best approach right now in this moment.
Wow, I love that. And do you have a cat?
Yeah, you can hear them in the background. We have three cats. Two are our rescue shelter kittens, and one is a feral that saw a good thing and moved into our yard, and we've been taking care of him for a couple of years. So there's a lot of cat energy running around here.
Yeah, happy cat energy. That's great. That's great. So let's talk about these eight states of awaken life wheel. I mean, they're all, each one of them. I mean, you're talking about the law of attraction here. So we're part of that spiritual that everybody else is hearing too.
That's right. Well, I'll just introduce each of the eight states by name first, and then whatever ones you want to dive deeper into, we'll just go for it.
Okay.
So the first one, and there's no linear order to these. Again, the idea that they're around a wheel, but of course we'll just talk about them in a certain order. So let's start with a good state of understanding. And in a good state of understanding, perhaps more than any of the other states, I present it as my experience of how this universe works. But I really do stress to people that we each get to create our own good state of understanding according to our own wisdom. And when I was invited by my teacher to become a Buddhist monk, I had some resistance to that in the beginning because I didn't know everything that I was going to be, quote unquote, expected to believe. And so my resistance to him, I said no at first when he invited me. It was a beautiful offer, and I said no. And he was very gracious and unattached to my response one way or the other. But he just, with curiosity and through an interpreter, he asked me why I was saying no. And I said, I don't know if I can believe everything you would expect me to believe, because I don't even know what that is yet. And his response was so sincere and authentic, and it's the same response I offer to people in our vision quests and our retreats and in the book. It's take what works from this and leave the rest here. Trust your own wisdom. Don't give your authority away to anybody. So in a good state of understanding, I lay down some of my ideas about what I've discovered about how I believe this world works, with that same idea of I hope they'll inspire people to create their own good state of understanding. And so we can jump into some more of those aspects. One of them is the idea of karma that we've already talked about. One of them, which is very well known to your listeners in the law of attraction, is that the world is mirroring what you're putting out. And so these are just a couple of aspects of a good state of understanding. Another one is that everything in this world is subject to cycles and timing, just like the seasons of the year. You know, they're our teacher for how this universe works. And so we are going to have the winters and the springs and the summers and the fall seasons of our life as well. And we'll keep cycling around and around through those. So there's a lot to be said in a good state of understanding. The next one is a good state of intention. And this idea is very well known to people. And yet I find that even in my own life, and I've been living this for decades, that I keep peeling down to subtler and subtler levels of intention. And I keep learning more and more where I still get in my way, or I learn more about where I'm being brilliant with this. But there's a lot to be said about this. And just really quickly, I would point people to look at the idea of intention and expectation. So a lot of times people might say, they might be applying for a new job, and they go, yes, it's my intention to get this job. It really is. It really is. And I go, that's great. What's your expectation? And they might look and they go, well, I don't think I'm going to get it.
Uh-huh.
I go, oh, how beautiful. We've revealed where your work is. Now, what do we have to do to get your expectation to meet your intention? So that's just one aspect of a good state of intention. Another one is a good state of words, which I know you're very familiar with. And it's this idea that our words are the most creative energy that we put out. Our words are, every word we speak is a creative force. And if you look at all the mythological creation stories, they all involve some version of the word being spoken, the word of creation. And so we have to really come to terms with that, that in every moment of our life, we are creating with the vibration of our words. And this is why things like complaining and speaking words of judgment and criticism is so it's so important that we kind of bust ourselves on this and free ourselves from those habits, because they're just habits and we can change them into much more resourceful ones.
Oh, good.
After a good state of words is a good state of being, and in a good state of being, we examine the quality and the nature of our relationships to all beings, including ourselves. So we have a mind intelligence, a heart intelligence, and a body intelligence, and how we care for ourselves is part of a good state of being. How we care for our relationships with our families, our colleagues, our loved ones. And also this includes our relationships, even to ideas like prosperity, for example. How is your relationship to prosperity? Is it really clean and bright, or is there a little bit of grit in the pipeline? So in a good state of being, we look at the quality and the nature of all of these relationships. The next one after that is a good state of purpose. And in a good state of purpose, we're looking at the idea of living a life of meaning and purpose. Every one of us carries our own gift, talent, and genius in this world, and the expression of that is the fulfillment of our purpose. And a lot of people, when I work with people as a coach, a lot of people get tangled up in what I call the complexity of purpose, and the invitation is to bring it back to its simplest form. So your purpose might simply be to be in joy. And by walking along the streets, being in joy, you put that out to everybody around you, and you're fulfilling your purpose just by doing that. It's amazing how impactful you can be on an 8-second elevator ride and impacting all the people with you in that elevator without saying a thing, just by how you're being while you're there. So those are some of the levels of a good state of purpose. And then we look at a good state of effort. In a good state of effort, we look at the quality and the amplitude of the effort you put in. So some people try to do small things with big hammers. So it's that idea of, oh, too much effort. You know, there's times when that's needed, but again, effort becomes a habit. So from a place of consciousness, we can gauge the right amount of effort to put in, but there's also the quality of the effort. So an example of that, I'd love this when I was in a monastery and I'd be sitting there and one of the monks would come walking up to me and his intention would be to ask me for a walk. And the way he would phrase that, he would come up to me and he'd go, "Would you like to come for a walk with me happily?" Mm-hmm. And I love the intention and the effort of that, because there's so many ways to walk. And I think, okay, I will go for a walk. Will I walk happily? Will I walk sincerely? Will I walk in suffering? There's so many choices available. So in a good state of effort, we kind of shine light on that. The next state after that is a good state of practice, where we look at a variety of practices that sustain our well-being in the life. And there's a discussion in there on choosing practices that look after your mind intelligence, your heart intelligence, your body intelligence, practices that look after the relationships in your life, and on from there. And then finally, the last state is a good state of doing. And as humans, we have this, I would call it responsibility, but hear that word as responsibility that can be carried with ease and delight. So we have this responsibility to go off and do things in the world, to be the difference that we are. And so how we're being in the moment is important, but what we're doing in the moment is also important. So a good state of doing is a discussion on how to do things in the world, how to be in action in a good way. So those are the 8 states, and you can see they're all important. So they're around a wheel, and the idea is, how do we brighten all of these up?
Yeah, I've got to tell you that you have 2 cats in the background, in your beautiful background, that are mating. Where does that come into the state of being?
That's the energy of creation. It's a beautiful energy. They teach me so much about play and spontaneity, and they are just in joy all the time.
They are. They are having a good time. I can rest assured.
Yeah, they're actually brothers, so I don't think they're literally, but they wrestle a lot, and they just have a great time around here.
Oh, I love the scenery. You can feel the energy that you're projecting out, and it's quite beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So continue on. This is so fascinating.
Yeah, so those are the 8 states. Now, the thing with these 8 states is when we take the time to really check in, I say this with respect to the most highly developed of us walking around, that there's so many opportunities to grow and develop ourselves even further. And for people that have had a life that's just really challenging them right now, you know, this world right now is really shaken. And the systems that have got us to this point are no longer sustainable. And so the rule book for how to move forward, it's being rewritten. We're all discovering it for the first time. But what I do know, and I hear this from so many people in our workshops that are working through with the material of this book, is it gives them something to lean into every day that they can count on. Because the one thing about this world moving forward is the one person we can trust is each of ourselves, with a capital S, selves. And so these eight states are the guide for how to respond to each moment, because the economic systems are just shaking right now. And there's a lot of opportunity in this, but there's a lot of things falling apart. There's so many people out there right now that have been rocked out of their trees with loss of jobs and stuff, and they have to start over. And this is a blessing. I know it doesn't feel like it in the beginning, but it really is a blessing, because what we do is we get to recreate, we get to begin again and create that world from this higher state of being in a way that's going to be sustainable for everything and for everybody. So it's a challenging time, and what an opportunity is for us.
So you are saying we can choose to be happy or we can choose to be miserable. The answer always lies within us. It's our choice. So can we choose happiness the majority of the time, or does that take rewiring the brain?
You know, it's a bit of both. It starts off, first of all, the question I always check in with people is, are you even willing to consider the choice? Or are you really committed to whatever your practice is up until now? So there are a lot of people that are really committed to a practice of struggle and suffer, or a practice of being a victim. And I'm not justifying what's going on around us. You know, right now, as we're speaking, for example, the protests at Wall Street and all around the world are happening. This is really relevant. I'm blessing those protests, because they're shining a light on practices that are going on in this world that are not sustainable. So to choose to be happy is not to be in denial. Sometimes people think, well, I'll just put happy thoughts over all the challenging things that are going on around me. And to a certain extent, that's helpful. But what I believe, first of all, is we need a reality check. So look around your life right now and just kind of take an inventory on what's really present in your life. Whether you like it or not, don't like it is not the question. Just take an inventory of what's really going on in your life right now. And then from a place of that, ask yourself, are you willing to engage with this from a place of being resourceful, from a place of being creative, and from a place of joy? No matter how negative that thing might seem, if somebody lost their job 6 months ago and they're getting a lot of getting turned down for a lot of interviews and stuff like that, that's a tough situation. So let's acknowledge that. But are you willing to engage with that from a place of joy? Because if you can imagine, if you're putting the energy out to find a new job right now, who's more likely to get the opportunities? Somebody who's shining with light and joy, or somebody who's really carrying that dark cloud around with them? So again, it's not to be in denial about what's going on, but it's saying, okay, you are where you are. How do you move forward right now from a place of happiness and joy? If people are in grieving of something, it's like, grieve fully. This is not about being in denial that there's something to grieve. It's like, embrace the grieving fully. Embrace it from a place of what I call your divine essence, and as opposed to a distortion. So distortion gets attached to the suffering. The suffering itself becomes the habit. Mm-hmm. Divine essence says, wow, this thing has happened, and it's challenging, and it's hard, and the invitation here is to fully touch it with the intention of integrating it and moving forward. And the moving forward is coming back into lightness and brightness and joy.
So the if we're stuck in there for a couple of weeks, is there a time that tells us that we need to shift and get to that better feeling place?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's on a different cycle and a different timeline, so it is hard to put a time limit around it. But one of the things, we talk about this in one of the states, is that we have a good response to the things that are happening that are both what perceived to be good and bad. So a good response is to say, okay, I have, somebody may have lost their job. I keep using that example because it's so prevalent out there right now. So somebody might say, I've lost my job. I'm going through anger. I'm grieving, but week by week, their relationship to that event is shifting. That's a good sign. Okay. It's shifting. So they're looking at it, they're touching it, it's working it. But if they've locked in to, say, being angry about it, and that's not shifting week by week by week, then I would at least start getting curious about what is the attachment here. Is there some aspect of you that has got attached to the suffering of this and is not really wanting to let go? And so you want to get to know that aspect of who you are. And there's different ways you can do that. You know, if somebody is really caught in a prolonged state of grief or a prolonged state of anger, I would really suggest that they find somebody that they can work with, maybe a counselor, a coach, a good friend who's skilled in those ways, that can just meet them without colluding with them and listen to them and get them to talk and express what's going on. And once the shift starts to happen, things then can change really quickly.
You mentioned the Occupy Wall Street. That's coming from a place of people being angry, even though it's shining light. So what do we do about all this anger? Will it cease or will it create even more anger? It doesn't seem like there's any solutions out there.
Right. Well, first of all, anger is, at one level, it's a natural human response to certain things. If I see somebody being, say, abusive to any other being, you know, children, women, other men, animals. If I see somebody being abusive to any other being, wow, there's that one in me that gets angry about that. It's like, hey, you've got to stop that now. You know, so the anger energy comes out in service of stopping that event.
Right.
But the difference is that, first of all, in that moment, I'm choosing to use anger from a place of good intention. I'm not trying to create more hurt in response to that event. I'm choosing it. But the other thing is that choosing anger in a specific moment might sometimes be a good choice, but sustaining the anger as your only response, first of all, it's not sustainable, and secondly, it quickly then becomes a distortion. So once we've kind of revealed what it is we're angry about, then I would expect to see a willingness to move from anger into the desire to be some contribution to the change of what's needed. So organizing circles to talk about the thing. But the point being is that the anger now shifts into something else. So for some of us, we have motivational habits. So some people use anger as their habit of motivating themselves to get moving.
Mm.
You know, that's a distortion because there's other ways to motivate ourselves.
Yeah, by getting passionate and getting excited. I would think that would be, but I can see what you're saying about the anger, though. That's really good to know.
And so one of the things I ask people to look at is, what's your habit? And if somebody has an anger habit, then this is no longer about choosing that as a response. That's just the way they're responding to the world. If somebody has a habit of of being a victim in the world, or a habit of being superior. Some people have the habit of, I will put other people down so I feel better.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily doing it consciously, by the way. It's a habit they created of elevating themselves at the expense of other people. So we really just want to like bust up our habits and come back to choicefulness about how to respond in any given moment. A long time ago, I saw an interview with the Dalai Lama, and somebody asked him if he got angry, and his response was, anytime it's useful.
Oh.
And so in the range of human emotions, it's in the range. But there's a difference between choosing the emotion of that versus reacting from this unconscious place.
That is very important. And I noticed that you had several suggestions in there about how to phrase your consciously use words.
Yes. So here's one tip on words. Anytime we say, I am anything, to a certain extent, we're telling a truth, and to a certain extent, we're lying. So if I said, I am, let's use angry again, since that's been here. If I said, I'm angry, it would be more accurate to say that there's one in me, or there's an aspect of me that's angry. Because in the same moment, if I was willing to look inside, I'd find another one in me that's quite joyful. So all of these energies live within us all the time. So what we found is when people kind of learn the habit of speaking more truthfully about what's going on, so to say, you know, there's one in me that's angry about what's going on in the world right now, and there's another one in me that's really motivated to get out there and do something about it from a place of service and a place of peace. Both those can be alive at the same time. Another way of talking that is to get the distinction between the past, the present, and the future. So if somebody said, life is really hard, I would say, well, you're probably talking about the experience you've been having up until now. So consider saying that the last year of my life has been really hard, or 3 years or 5 years, whatever that is. Speak about it from the point of view of this period of time up until now has been really hard. Because right now in this moment, there's an opportunity to shift into from hard into something completely different, like abundant. And so when we, you know, our words, we in school, we learn how to spell words. Well, what is a spell? We cast spells with our words. So when we speak, we really want to be conscious of the spell we're casting.
Wow.
So rather than saying life is this way, we cast a spell when we say that on the future. So you have to think before you say those words, you have to ask yourself, is that the spell I really want to cast? So I would say, I work a lot with entrepreneurs, and for years, it's kind of been the same experience. I always tell entrepreneurs that the first 3 years will meet you with breakthroughs and challenge together. You're going to experience all of that in your first 3 years. And there's a way to talk about that saying, oh yeah, so for the last couple of months, I've been in a time of challenge. And now, moving forward from here, I really believe that the breakthrough is possible. I can feel that it's coming close. That's a much more resourceful point of view than saying, it's been challenging for the last 6 months. And well, you know what? Life is just challenging and that's all there is.
So you're actually changing their beliefs.
We do shift our beliefs. Well, our words are an expression of our beliefs.
Okay.
So when if people, and a lot of people are not really clear what their beliefs are. They may be clear about the beliefs they tell themselves they have.
Right.
But if they really look at their words, thoughts, and actions, they may actually reveal that they're holding a different belief system than what they're telling themselves. So what belief system are your words revealing? Is that the belief you really want to be creating your future from this moment on with? If it is, fantastic. Put more light, put more energy into that. But if you recognize your words are expressing a belief that is not the most resourceful one to move forward with, then choose now to make it something different.
I love that, casting the spell. I love that. That is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So teaching all of these entrepreneurs, are we headed for a more conscious, spiritual approach to business nowadays? Is this really awakening for us?
I really believe this is true. The businesses that are doing well these days are the businesses that are really aligned with the well-being of all, that are aligned with sustainability. There's so much opportunity. There's no generalization that's true that would say, you know, that this is a hard time for everybody. There's a lot of people that are thriving and doing really well right now. And so look at what those businesses are up to. And almost all the time you'll see that these are businesses that are engaged in sustainable practices. These are businesses that are treating the people inside them really well, whether it be a small business or a large organization. And what's sustainable moving forward is obviously what's going to thrive. And so in order to thrive moving forward, we've got to be in good relationship, in a good state of being with the oceans, the forests, the earth itself. We've got to be in a good state of being with, this whole idea about, for the last 10, 15, 20 years about outsourcing work to smaller villages in other countries just because it was cheaper. Well, that was a very abusive approach to go off. There's nothing sustainable about that. But that same company could go off to a village anywhere. And by the way, you don't need to leave America. It's not about what country you're in, but it's whatever population you're engaging with. How do you engage with them from a place of well-being? What is the salary that is going to support these people in a good way? What are the working conditions that will support these people in a good way? And it doesn't matter then where those people are, because you're going to find it's a much leveler playing field all around the planet when your intention is to be fair with everybody rather than to take advantage of people just because for a little while you can.
Yeah, so it goes under being of service too. You're serving everyone that you come into contact with, whether it's a business or a relationship.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting, when I work with people as a coach at an individual level, whether they're in big organizations or whether they're individuals wanting to learn more about their spiritual well-being or whether they're entrepreneurs that are creating businesses, I find that people really do want to do the right thing. Mm. I find that people at an individual level really understand that their impact on the world does matter. And all that's going on right now is that there are some organizations that have created a system in the organization that's not reflecting that yet. So that's going to change, because even some of what might look like the most nefarious organizations are populated with good people.
Good point.
And so I call them the secret agents of change in those organizations. And a lot of times they want to know what they can do. They feel overwhelmed because the system they're in is not necessarily about sustainability and well-being. And one of the things I encourage them to do is start creating conversations inside the organization about what's needed to shift how we operate in this organization. And this is one of the teachings in the book, by the way, is this practice of walking with the question. So every day I recommend to people to walk out your door with a question that day that kind of guides how you're going to show up when you arrive at work. It'll guide the conversations you're having with people. And it tends to be questions that are something in the shape of what's needed for this to go in a better way.
That is good. That is really good. I want to make sure that everybody sees and gets this book because it is phenomenal. Tell us how we can get it.
Amazon.com has it as a kind of a global source, or Amazon.uk. Our own website at awakenedwisdom.com has got it as well. And then the other thing is people go to our website. One thing I've just created, I've put it up here, I'm really excited about it, it's free. It's called the 21-Day Vision to Action Challenge. And what I've created is a series of 21 videos. You'll get one a day for 21 days that will inspire and motivate you to consider how to bring your dream and your vision in the world through to action. And this has been running for a while now. It starts the day you join, so don't worry about people that have already gone through it. You go through it at your own pace, and it will inspire you, and it will do more than inspire you. It'll actually give you things to try out in your life, and it's completely free. And then the other thing is we do vision questing. We do two-day urban visions right in the middle of a city near you, or we take people out into the desert for a week at a time. I just came back from the Joshua Tree area where we were on a vision quest experience with a group of people, and it is just the most profound experience to go out there and to be guided through a process and do some solo time on the land and some fasting and get really clear about where what's next for you in your life and what's the vision that you are being called to participate in. So these are different ways that people can connect in with their own wisdom.
I have met someone who has gone to your workshops, and she said it's incredible, an incredible experience. So, yeah, wow. I'm anxious. I'm going to come to one of them myself. I'm really anxious to do that.
Oh, thank you. And we take them all around the world. I'm just looking at some locations in Europe again and in North America. We're always touring around. So no matter where in the world people are living, just let us know. People always say, well, you'll come to my city. And I always say, I go where I'm invited. So if you want me to come to your city, just contact us. Let's have a conversation. Let's figure out how to make that happen.
Oh, great. I'm going to have you come down to San Diego.
I would love it. I was in San Diego with our work last year, and it's about time we came back.
Oh, good. Oh, good. That's wonderful. Well, this has been so informative. I can't thank you enough. I really can feel your energy, and it's absolutely beautiful. And where you are with your wonderful happy cats and everything, oh, what a blessing you are to this world. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you as well, Jules. This is an amazing show you've created, and I know that you've got an audience all around the world, and that's the mirror of your good heart as well.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
And to all you listeners out there, dream on. Your dreams are shaping what's going on in your world. Just stay with it. That's all. Just stay with it. The challenge doesn't mean it's not meant to be. The challenge is just saying how bad you want it.
Dream on. That's the new thing that we're going to sing. Dream on. That's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you again.
And you as well. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
As we close another show, it is my sincerest wish that you have a wonderful week ahead. Remember, through you, the world changes to reflect your happiness. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please send me an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com.